I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Today on Midday, a conversation with Howard County Executive Calvin Ball. Howard County consistently appears on the Forbes magazine list of America's wealthiest counties. We'll talk about how HoCo has coped with the coronavirus so far in advance of the opening of a mass vaccination site soon at the mall in Columbia. Plans for flood mitigation in Ellicott City just got a big boost from the state of Maryland. What help from the American Rescue Plan can the county count on? Calvin Ball joins me to talk about the issues that matter most to Howard County and to the Baltimore metro region. Plus, the acclaimed singer Navasha Dea previews her latest project, a tribute album to Gil Scott-Heron. Midday starts after the news. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday on this opening day for the Baltimore Orioles. They are back at Camden Yards. And for the first time in more than 18 months, fans will be with them. About 11,000 season ticket holders have been issued tickets for today's game. Represents about 25% capacity of the stadium, so the O's will take on the Boston Red Sox at 3:05 this afternoon. We begin today here on Midday with this update from Annapolis. Yesterday, the General Assembly passed a sweeping package of legislation around the contentious issue of police reform. The bills are aimed at creating more transparency and accountability on the part of police, changing the way misconduct cases are handled, making some police disciplinary records public, and revising the rules about body cameras and use of force. The package of four bills repeals the Law Enforcement Officers' Bill of Rights, and it replaces it with another discipline process that includes local police accountability boards. The bills go to Governor Larry Hogan after weeks of intense debate between the House and the Senate. Another bill of particular interest to Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott is the legislation that passed that will send the issue of local control of the Baltimore Police Department to a referendum for voters in either 2022 or perhaps 2024. Mayor Scott has long advocated for bringing the department back under full control of the city. The department has been officially a state agency since the 1860s. The last day of the 2021 session is Monday, and we'll have a recap of what the legislature accomplished here on Midday Tuesday, the day after Sine Die. My guest today is Howard County Executive Calvin Ball. The county will open a mass vaccination site soon at the mall in Columbia. Two other sites have been up and running for some time now. Like leaders in other jurisdictions, County Executive Ball will be juggling negative economic impacts for his county with the aid of funds from the American Rescue Plan. Many Howard County students and teachers are back in their classrooms, and school sports will return next week. The county has ended its contract with ICE to detain suspects at the detention center in Jessup. A referendum to repeal the county's new sanctuary county law will appear on the ballot in 2022. And plans to fortify Ellicott City against future flooding are progressing with the announcement of some new state aid. County Executive Ball joins us today from his office in Ellicott City. Mr. County Executive, welcome back. Good to talk to you.
Well, thank you so much for having me back, and good to be here.
So I wonder, what's your reaction to the passage of these four bills around police reform in Annapolis? A lot of contentious debate. How will that affect Howard County policing, and what do you think?
Well, I tell you what, here in Howard County, we are committed to not only people being safe, but feeling safe. And so not too long ago, just a couple weeks ago, I actually announced that in my upcoming budget, we're going to be putting in about $3.2 to $3.3 million for a body camera program. And it'll have cameras for about 300 uniformed officers, 10 new positions, and making sure that we also have cameras for about 70 deputies in the sheriff's office. And so we are already moving forward with this body-worn camera initiative to ensure that there is accountability and that everyone feels safer.
Let's talk about the pandemic and the response that the county has mounted against COVID-19. You've got a mass vax site opening up pretty soon. The announced date at one point was April 26th. Is that still on schedule, or is it going to be any time earlier? What do you think?
Well, I'll tell you what, we are just so grateful to work with the governor and MEMA and his team to not only identify a site at the mall in Columbia, which we're excited, especially given its proximity to everywhere in Howard County, but also throughout the region. And we are looking at early estimates to be able to actually administer about 2,000 to 3,000 doses a day. And so we're still on track for that week of April 26th, but we're actually working with the governor's office to see if we can accelerate it, vaccine dependent.
And of course, you know, it's the expectation that the supply of vaccine will continue to increase with each passing week. You've already got some community-based sites giving out vaccines. Talk about the mobile sites that you have, because so many jurisdictions are wrestling with this problem of people who don't have transportation, or they're infirmed, they're confined to their homes, and they can't get out and get to these sites wherever they are. Talk about the mobile efforts that you all are doing in Howard County.
Well, in Howard County, we are so glad to be one of the most efficient at actually vaccinating our population. We are one of the leaders in the state of getting shots in arms. However, as you indicated, vaccine equity is an issue. And so we have already launched our mobile integrated community health unit, and we're working through an infrastructure that we established during our census, where we found those hard to count populations are likely to now be our hard to vaccinate population. So we've already put out nearly 1,700 vaccinations by our MICH. And we are all moving forward with about $1 million in grant funding to local organizations to help close that barrier to access and make sure that everyone can get vaccinated and keep everyone safe.
What about the issue of hesitancy? We hear not only problems with access, but problems with some people just remain unconvinced that they should get a vaccine. What are your health officials telling you about that in terms of Howard County residents?
Well, I'll tell you what, we have access to three vaccines, Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson. All three are safe, effective, and efficacious. And we have actually been partnering with many community leaders, such as in the faith community, to ensure that not only do we have better access, but we do work through that hesitancy. So when people see that they're in their church or their mosque or their synagogue, that their pastors and their leaders are getting vaccinated, they understand that this is a safe place where they feel more comfortable getting that vaccine, much more than some other places where they do have concerns.
So are you concerned that there's going to be, you know, a substantial part of the Howard County citizenry that is going to remain hesitant about it? Or do you think that, you know, as you say, these local leaders and folks that have credibility in various communities, they think they will ultimately be able to convince most people to get the shot?
Well, here in Howard County, we have nearly 40% of our residents who have already had their first dose. And I think that we are moving toward a good, productive place. I do have concerns about the hesitancy, about the access, and that's why our team is working so incredibly hard.
Howard County Executive Calvin Ball is my guest. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. To join our conversation with Dr. Ball, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle is @midday_WYPR. And to follow me on Twitter, it's @TomHall_WYPR. Dr. Ball, we have an email from a listener, Michelle, who says, do you envision Howard County will have local police accountability board. This is one of the things that is called for in the legislation we were just talking about at the top of our conversation. But how do you envision that happening in Howard County?
Well, in Howard County, we actually already have a citizens board who has been working with our police. And we many of the interventions that the state calls for and that people are concerned about, we've already implemented them here in Howard County. I was pleased to not only appoint the first African-American police chief, the first woman police chief, but even more importantly, a veteran with nearly 30 years experience who worked her way up in our police department. And with that experience, she was able to really understand how we can ensure not only is there accountability, but that there is faith and confidence in our police department. And so while we haven't seen many of the issues documented here that we've seen around the nation, we continue to aspire to be more transparent and more accountable.
Let's talk about schools for a second. Kids and teachers have headed back in recent weeks. Teachers around the state had voiced concerns about being obliged to return to in-person teaching in classrooms without being vaccinated. Do you have any data and any idea how many of the teachers in the Howard County school system have been able to receive a vaccine? And can you give us an update on what your teachers are telling you about their experience being back in the classroom?
So in Howard County, we have about 9,300 educators, and we are at approximately 100% of those educators who wanted the vaccine getting their first dose. We prioritized educators along with our older adults and our more vulnerable to help ensure a safe place for teaching and learning for our educators and our children. And recently, we even launched a mobile testing initiative where 5 days a week, from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. in Long Reach Village Center, North Laurel Community Center, Normandy Shopping Center, our Recreation and Parks headquarters, and the Elkridge 50 Plus, that we would be able to have even more frequent 24-hour PCR testing. And that was done in cooperation with our educators and our school system. And then finally, we actually gave more funding early on to ensure they had sufficient resources. And so it's important for us to have that teaching and learning environment that is safe as our educators and our students are going back into the classroom.
And you have school sports taking up again next week, as I understand it. What are you hearing from parents and students and teachers in general about the efforts to get folks back into the classroom? I mean, obviously, I guess you're offering, the schools are offering both, they're offering a hybrid model, so you can continue to be educated online or you can also go into the building. I mean, what are most people choosing and what's your sense of how this gradual return to in-person learning is going?
I think as people get vaccinated and there's more confidence in the vaccine, we're seeing more interest in going back into the classroom and school buildings. We all want our kids and our educators to return to school buildings as soon as they can safely do it. And so I think us working together to ensure that that safe environment happens is of the utmost importance, and a critical linchpin is the vaccination. And so I think we're moving toward that from this current hybrid model. As a father of a student athlete, I think this session of learning and fits and starts is, you know, part of the challenge of growth and getting through this together. But I think that as the weather is warming and we're able to do more things outside, we're going to see an increase of that. And the mobile testing and frequent testing is something that I think will also help people feel more comfortable and confident.
We'll have more with Howard County Executive Calvin Ball after we take a quick break. You can join our conversation when we return at 410 662-8780. You can email us, midday@wypr.org. You can tweet us at @MiddayWYPR. You can follow me on Twitter anytime you like, @TomHallWYPR. It's Midday. Stay with us.
You're listening to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up a little later today, producer Mark Gunnery checks in with a wonderful singer, Navasha Dea. She's got a new project in the works. It's an album that pays tribute to the great soul and jazz poet and musician Gil Scott Heron. And coming up tomorrow, the author Anna Malaika Tubbs joins me to discuss her new book, The Three Mothers, How the Mothers of Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, and James Baldwin Shaped a Nation. Plus, the internationally acclaimed classical violinist Jennifer Coe will check in advance of her online concert at the Shriver Hall Concert Series. So that's all coming up tomorrow here on Midday. If you've just joined us today, my guest is Howard County Executive Calvin Ball. Mr. Ball is one of the local leaders, by the way, featured on a new podcast that I'm hosting. The latest edition of the Chesapeake Connect podcast features Calvin Ball, along with Aaron Tamarchio of TradePoint Atlantic in Baltimore County. We'll talk about local jurisdictions and how they're responding to changes in the economy. To join our conversation today with County Executive Ball, we're at 410-662-8780. Our email's midday@wypr.org, and you can tweet us @MiddayWYPR. So speaking of the economy, Mr. Ball, and the effect of the COVID-19 pandemic, the American Rescue Plan, $1.9 trillion spread over the 50 states and Washington, D.C., a total of about $60 million is expected to flow to Howard County. Talk about the process of deciding how to allocate that money, what restrictions you are currently aware of are attached to that money, and how's that going to affect your budget process going forward?
Well, this is an uncertain time when it comes to budget stability. And, you know, our state and local governments haven't received direct relief for nearly a year since the CARES Act was passed last March. And so Howard County is excited and very appreciative of our congressional delegation to get over $63 million in that federal relief that was, of course, allocated on a population basis and needs to be used by December 31st, 2024. And so the categories that we're looking at, which align with the relief money, are responding to COVID-19 emergency and addressing economic effects, especially to our households, small businesses, and nonprofits, making sure that if there is pay that needs to happen to our essential workers or grants for employees, we have that, and providing government services that have been affected by revenue reduction related to COVID-19, as well as investments in water and sewer and broadband infrastructure.
Talk about ICE and the decision to end your contract with the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agencies. What was that contract about? What did the contract allow ICE to do in Howard County? And what's the timetable for that agreement to be concluded?
Well, from around December of 2017 to December 2018, when I took office, there were about 100 detainees that were in our detention center who were from ICE. As of January 2020, we had about 70. But I always indicated that we would proactively revisit and evaluate the contract. And so in March, we were down to 8 detainees, and now we have 3. And this was part of a long-going conversation during September of last year. We actually changed the qualifications so that the ICE detainees could only be those who were convicted of a crime of violence, as defined by the Maryland Criminal Code annotated section 14-01. And then in December, once the Biden administration took over, we actually wrote a letter to the transition team talking about needs to changes to ICE. And we're very pleased that Secretary Mayorkas got confirmed. And so we're seeing a change in philosophy from the weaponization that we saw under the previous administration to really trying to bring people together to address this issue throughout the entire nation, which is something that gives me more comfort in ending this contract.
There was a law passed by the county council, suggested or proposed by the vice chair, Opel Jones, called the Liberty Act. And this law prevents county employees from questioning or reporting the immigration status of people using county services. There is now been a group that's risen up called Citizens for a Strong and Safe Howard County, and they were able to gather enough signatures on a petition to call for a repeal of that law, and that will appear now on the November 2022 ballot. Tell us about what that law was meant to do and your response to the folks who oppose that law and are looking to repeal it.
So 4 years ago, as a Howard County councilman, I actually co-sponsored what we called CB9, which was legislation that would protect our undocumented immigrants in Howard County from discrimination by county employees. Dr. Opal Jones, who actually moved forward with that Liberty Act, was something very similar to our CB9, and I was proud to sign that in December of last year. And like you said, Liberty Act prevents county employees from asking about the immigration statuses of residents and discriminating based on immigration status and making sure that certain related information to citizenship is kept confidential. I think that we should be an inclusive place that fights against discrimination and targeting people based upon their immigration status. And I'm actually saddened by those who are trying to move forward with this referendum. But I remain hopeful because I think that the Howard County residents will again come together and embrace our neighbors, many of whom have been living here for years or decades, raising families here, and not give in to the division and the vitriol that we saw against our immigrant neighbors, brothers, and sisters.
Are you comfortable with the characterization of Howard County as being a sanctuary county under this law? Does that rhetoric bother you one way or the other?
I think right now it's less about what we call ourselves and more about the policies and how people feel. Do our immigrant neighbors feel safe and comfortable, or do they feel afraid like their government is going to attack them or not protect them? When they feel afraid, we see increases in crime because many of the criminal element actually targets our immigrants, and our immigrants are afraid to talk about things like domestic violence or crime that they see around in our community for fear of retaliation, threats that their green cards will be taken away. And so I think having a community where people feel safe enough to come together and report crime and to actively participate in our community makes all of us stronger and better.
Dr. Calvin Ball is the county executive of Howard County. Our number here at Midday to join our conversation with Dr. Ball is 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWYPR. And Dr. Ball, as you can imagine, we have a few listeners who have questions about flood mitigation in Ellicott City. We all have vivid memories of the devastation that occurred in that area a couple of times over the last few years. Can you give us an update on the what's called the City Safe and Sound Plan?
Well, within 100 days of coming into office, we put together our Safe and Sound Plan to help keep Ellicott City safe and thriving for generations to come. This city is nearly 250 years old, and we want to make sure that it lasts another 250 years. And so we are so excited that just recently, we actually announced the extension of the North Tunnel, which will not only help reduce water levels, but also eliminate the need for some other projects and disruption, save homes and historical properties, and be cost neutral. And so we're quite excited about a project that in a 2016 Ellicott City flood scenario, this extended tunnel is anticipated to reduce the water on Main Street from approximately 3.5 feet now down to less than a half a foot. And so we are working together as the federal, state, and local to fund things. In fact, in my proposed capital budget that I released just about a week ago, we've allocated nearly $90 million toward Ellicott City Safe and Sound. We have been asked to apply for a federal WIFIA fund of about $75 million. And just recently, during this session, Senator Katie Fry Hester, Delegate Courtney Watson, Senator Guy Gazzoni, our entire delegation and the leadership were able to put together nearly $9 million in this capital budget for Safe and Sound. And so we are investing with our time, with our treasure, and with our sweat equity to make sure that Ellicott City is that example of resiliency in an ever-changing and increasing climate for not only the rest of the state, the nation, but frankly, the world.
Let's go to the phones to Angie, who is on the line from Ellicott City. Angie, welcome to Midday with Dr. Calvin Ball.
Thank you. Hi, Calvin.
Hey, Angie.
How you doing? I'm just delighted with the flood mitigation plans that the county has and with the help of the state. We have significant problems, though, in older neighborhoods of Ellicott City, in particular like my neighborhood of Dunlogan, with stormwater management because of the nature of our soil. My community was built in the 1950s with somewhat larger lots because of the nature of the soil and stormwater management appropriate for that period. Today, they've allowed much, much more subdivision and no increased stormwater management. And as a result, my neighbors have thousands, tens of thousands, in one case, $75,000 worth of damage, not from our 2018-type floods, but from heavy rains. We have two kinds of things that need to be done. One is not to allow any more subdivision without some kind of protection being given, but how is the county going to address the existing problems? I know it's expensive to fix for the county, but it sure is expensive for the neighbors as well.
Great question, and thank you so much. And I think this speaks to the importance of flood mitigation throughout our entire nation. You know, I was very pleased that we passed the strongest forest conservation law in the state here just last year. In Howard County, our forest conservation laws hadn't been touched since the 90s, and we moved forward to be an example. And these flood mitigation efforts in Ellicott City are, as Angie indicated, needed throughout the rest of our county and our state because we're seeing the increased intensity and frequency of storms. And the final point is that we do need to hold developers accountable, and we need to ensure that as we are developing, we're developing in smarter, safer ways than we were decades ago. Here in Howard County, we have about 40% of our county, which is preserved indefinitely. And then the vast majority of it is already developed. And so I think in the coming decade, what we're going to see a lot more of is redevelopment. And we need to make sure that we redevelop in those kind of ways that embrace the innovations and the environmental sustainability of not just current, but future generations.
County Executive Calvin Ball of Howard County, 410-662-8780. Our email here at Midday, midday@wypr.org. You can tweet us as well, @MiddayWYPR. I'm Tom Hall. So, Mr. County Executive, we've got an email from Stephen, who seems somewhat displeased. He says, why have you allowed such excessive building sprawl near Old Town Ellicott City with no infrastructure for water runoff around the Old Town? He says Baltimore County decided decades ago not to provide sewer pumping on their side of Ellicott City, which is why there's so little development on their side of the hill and much better water absorption than on the Howard County side. And he adds, he suspects that the decision to sacrifice the Old Town, that's how he puts it, was made so that suburban communities would not have to bear an additional tax burden. When it comes to development and this plan, the flood plan moving forward, how do you think, you know, concerns like Stevens are going to be addressed?
I think those are very legitimate concerns. And, you know, although we've been in office for about 2 years and in COVID-19 for a little over that year, and then we started the beginning of our term with the longest federal government shutdown in history, most of the development that people have seen over the last several years either happened or was approved before the last couple years. However, moving forward, we do need to ensure that there's appropriate infrastructure. And I'm very pleased that, you know, in my upcoming capital budget, we did try to put more money in for road resurfacing, about $10 million, nearly $4 million in systemic facility improvements, $5 million for county and grant for pedestrian bicycle improvements to have a more multimodal system, and many, many other capital investments. I think that we do need to have the appropriate infrastructure and that we do need to ensure that we're developing in a more thoughtful way, which is why I actually accelerated our general plan process, which usually happens about every 10 years, to now we're doing it in about 9 years. And so that general plan will set development for the upcoming decade to ensure that we are developing and thinking about those things. We call our plan HOCO by Design, and it'll establish that vision for a county that will be more equitable and environmentally as well as fiscally sustainable for a future that meets the needs of our residents, especially our most vulnerable, underrepresented, and those who might need to look at some of those infrastructure challenges that Stephen mentioned.
Yeah, this is really a complicated thing. I mean, as I understand it, there are two kinds of flooding problems. There's the top-down floods, and then there's the bottom-up floods. But if there is a rain event over an extended period of time, as opposed to, you know, a quick, concise, concentrated burst of rain, this plan, the Safe and Sound plan, is going to have a tough time dealing with that extended period of rain time, the bottom-up flooding. So, I mean, is there a way of you know, guarding against all possibilities when it comes to these kinds of natural disasters?
Well, Old Town Ellicott City is geographically pretty much at the bottom of a concrete bowl. 200 years ago, it was the very best place to be able to handle shipping and get wares in and out of this area. The world has changed a lot. However, that's one of the reasons why we worked on the extended North Tunnel, which is going to start around 8800 Frederick Road and now run approximately 5,000 feet to the Patapsco River. And so these are the kinds of things that we are working to mitigate for. However, there will be another storm. And as much as we can mitigate, as much as we can work towards stormwater management, none of us can beat Mother Nature.
Let's go to the phones to Brenda, who's also calling from Ellicott City. Brenda, welcome to Midday with County Executive Ball.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to say that some of the people circulating that petition did not explain it well. I find it, and I wish I could...
What petition are you talking about? You're talking about the immigration petition, Brenda?
Yes, Yes, because I said to the young man, is this an anti-ICE, you know, petition, meaning that it would protect immigrants from harassment? And he said, yes, so I signed it. So that's bad on me for not reading anything, but I don't believe they gave me anything to read.
All right, well, thanks for
thank you so
letting
much,
us know
Brandon.
Your experience, Brennan.
You bring up an issue that I'm hearing a lot when it comes to that petition, that some who collected signatures were not completely forthright and were not clear about the petition. And that's why I still hold faith that even though they met the legal threshold for number of signatures, once it's explained about how we will fight against discrimination, how we want to make sure that our residents and our neighbors feel more comfortable living here, those who haven't been committing any major crimes but just are here in an undocumented status, I think our county will do the right thing. And Brenda is a fine example of that.
And Mr. County Executive, you alluded to this a little bit earlier, but talk about the Asian American community in Howard County in particular. There's a pretty significant Asian American population in Howard County, and there has been, as I understand it, a spike in crimes that seem to, seek out and target Asian Americans. Of course, this is happening across the country. But talk about what's going on in Howard County and what the government is doing to counter it.
Howard County has one of the highest percentages of the Asian American or Pacific Islander residents. You know, we have nearly 60,000 residents who identify. And so I was very proud and honored to launch our AAPI work group around early February of just this year, where we had many community members come together. I think that we have seen, especially with the unfortunate COVID-19 pandemic, a great deal of negative rhetoric focused on our AAPI community. And so it's incumbent upon all of us to fight against discrimination and hate in any forms, including that against our AAPI community. And so here in Howard County, we aspire to be the exemplar and lead the state and the nation in being a place where everyone feels safe and comfortable, regardless of your race, country of origin, or many of those factors that actually create a beautiful tapestry of diversity here in Howard County.
Did you have some incidents where, for example, restaurants owned by the AAPI community were targeted?
Unfortunately, on Lunar New Year, we actually had burglaries, and many of those entities that were burglarized were owned by our Asian neighbors. Our police department, not only through our chief, but also our AAPI police liaison, has been working diligently to not only solve those crimes, but also connect with those business owners and others in our community who are concerned about that. And then we hosted here in Howard County with the help of many other nonprofits and groups, something that wasn't directly tied to the government, a Stop Asian Hate rally where many of our community members came together in solidarity. So we have had some challenges like in many other parts of the country, but we are facing them head on.
Calvin Ball is the County Executive of Howard County. Mr. County Executive, thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Look forward to the next time.
As do I. And make sure everybody on this Orioles opening day for home opener has an amazing day.
There you go. An amazing day indeed. Coming up, the great soul and jazz singer Navasha Dea. She's got a new project that pays tribute to Gil Scott-Heron. We'll hear about that on the other side of a quick break. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're tuned to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.